Okay, this is a case of NBC subsidiary WMAQ TV LLC versus the City of Chicago Police Department and Office of Emergency Management and Communications, 1240629. You have before you Justices Cynthia Cobb, Justice Terry Lavin, Justice James Fitzgerald Smith. Our procedure basically is the appellant goes first, has 10 to 15 minutes. Usually we don't interrupt unless you get off on a tangent. Then we ask questions, and then the appellee does the same, and then the conclusion. With that, the appellant may start.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. Before I begin, I'm not sure if there's a visual notification when we reach time, but I just wanted to let the court know that I'm blind. So if there is some sort of visual notification, I would appreciate it if there'd be some way to get sort of an audio cue, just so I don't go on for ad nauseum. I would
I'll give you a warning.
appreciate that. Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court?
Let me
Counsel?
ask you first, why was this case not just refiled after you got your decline?
Sure, Your Honor. I think a couple of reasons. One, there are several plaintiff has brought several similar requests to this. This is a broader issue that the appellant has been investigating as part of their reporting over the course of years, and so it's important to plaintiff to get this issue resolved so that we don't have repeats of this situation, and so that in future plaintiff can obtain this information in a more timely manner without having to, wait for what we believe to be unnecessary time to pass.
All right, proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. And good afternoon again, Your Honor. My name is Josh Lovey, and I represent the appellant here. And we are asking this court to reverse the circuit court's grant of summary judgment to appellee, and we're asking it to do so for two reasons, two deficiencies in appellee's underlying case. The first being that the appellee has failed to do the work necessary to establish, by clear and convincing evidence, that a FOIA Exemption 7-1D applies to the withheld records. And second, that the that again, the appellee has failed to establish, by clear and convincing evidence, that the Body-Worn Camera Act prohibits the release of these records. And in both instances, it's our position that the appellee has adopted an all or nothing approach in opposition to the more nuanced standard that FOIA demands. So first, with regards to 7-1D, I think it's useful if I may just kind of give some of the broader context for what information was public and released to the city at large at the time that appellant made the underlying request in this case. By the time that the appellant had submitted their FOIA request, the city had already released a community alert. I should also say this, as your honors know, case relates to a hit and run death that remains an open case to this day. But at the time that appellant made the request at issue, the city had already released a community alert, which provided quite a bit of information about the suspect vehicle, including its make and model, license plate number, some information about the direction of travel it left after the accident, as well as some other things that the suspect driver had done around the time of the hit and run. Subsequently, the appellant also was able to purchase a crash report directly from the city of Chicago that contained significant amounts of information related to this case, including witness names and descriptions of the things that those particular witnesses saw. So I think that's a useful backdrop to understand, to place defend appellants, excuse me, appellees' response in a little bit of context. Because when an appellee denied plaintiff's request, claiming that the materials are exempt under 7-1D, they cited harms related to the very information that they themselves had already released. In fact, made a point of making as public as they possibly could to advance the early portions of their investigation. Now, once the request was made, Essentially, the city was trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube to an extent. They're trying to claim that release of the information, again, some of which overlaps with what they had already released, would in fact endanger their investigation by potentially prejudicing witnesses and giving the suspect information about the extent of jeopardy that they could be in, where the investigation stands. But again, those claims are significantly diluted, if not completely washed away, by the fact that much of this information had already been made public by defendant itself. And so to claim that these conclusory harms that defendant or excuse me that appellee has pointed to not just could endanger their investigation, but in fact would interfere with their investigation is simply not supported by the declarations that they have offered in support. Again, the standard that FOIA requires is a public body to establish by clear and convincing evidence. That is, as your honors are well aware, an elevated standard in which the fact finder cannot be left in any reasonable doubt that the particular exemption applies. Instead, what we have here are conclusory allegations that are included in Appley's declarations in support that aren't tied in any level of detail to the records themselves. And so what should have happened at that point is under FOIA and under this court's past precedent, the circuit court should have conducted an in-camera review because Appley failed to establish their claim and looked for itself to determine whether or not there are portions of these records that could have been released and should have been released. Because at the end of the day, the guiding star, one of the guiding stars of FOIA, is the idea that exemptions should be construed narrowly and that where possible, all non-exempt information should be released. And it has been held time and again that it is irrelevant, to what extent a particular document must be redacted in order for it to be released. A public body is still required to do that work, to conduct a review of the record, to only redact those things that it can support its exemption claim on and release everything else. And it's not able to make value judgments about what the value of what's left behind. They are required to do that level of work. And that simply did not occur in this case, Your Honors. Appley provided, again, high-level statements, which were undermined by the city's own actions. And rather than can do the legwork of establishing those claims, essentially Appley waved their hands over it and claimed that the entirety of the file was exempt. And again, at that point, the circuit court, under this court's past precedent, should have conducted an in-camera review. Because it did not do so, we asked this court to reverse the lower court's finding that exemption 7-1D applies and remand this case for that in-camera review so that a more in-depth analysis can be done of these records to determine what in fact can be released and what is properly exempt. I do just want to note briefly that it is not plaintiff's position that this is an all or nothing proposition. It is certainly the case that there could be portions, even large portions of these records that are properly exempt. It's not plaintiff's or appellant's position that this court must remand and order everything to be released. Instead, again, the court could do the in-camera review that take the place of the type of review that the public body should have done in the first place. I would next, if I may, like to turn to the Body-Worn Camera Act. And again, we would ask that this court reverse the circuit court's determination that release of the body cam video specifically is prohibited by that statute. Now, the parties agree that the sort of governing dispute here is whether or not the subjects of that video had a reasonable expectation of privacy at the time that it was taken. And under the definition that the legislature suggested it intended to apply to the Body-Worn Camera Act, that standard is both a subjective standard of whether a particular individual had an expectation of privacy, as well as whether it's the type of that expectation is the type of privacy that society is prepared to recognize. And that's, of course, coming from the Katz decision and its progeny. And so it's a relatively straightforward analysis as to what is meant by a reasonable expectation of privacy. But defendant or appellee takes attempts to, intends to take it a little bit of a different direction, because in here, in this particular instance, they conflate the analysis related to a reasonable expectation of privacy with the types of privacy interests that could be implicated in that video, or I'm sorry, in that content. And again, they're attempting to draw an all or nothing standard, where they cite specific privacy interests that could potentially be implicated by release of this record. They try to use that to essentially throw a sheet over the entirety of the body-worn camera video and withhold it all. But again, that's not what plaintiff is asking, was asking the lower court to do, and not what we're asking this court to do now. Instead, FOIA provides a vehicle to vindicate those privacy interests. Exemption 7(1)(c), which is not at issue before your honors today, but does provide a vehicle for the types of privacy concerns that Appley has cited to be addressed. But what it is instead trying to do is sort of have its cake and eat it too. It wants the ability to claim that a privacy interest is implicated, and so the record should not be released, without subjecting that privacy interest to the balancing test that FOIA has made clear must apply. Because where a particular privacy exemption is claimed under FOIA, any unwarranted invasion of privacy must be balanced against the public interest. But plaintiff hasn't had the opportunity to do that here, because the standard is different, should be different under the Body-Worn Privacy Act, or excuse me, the Body-Worn Camera Act, as the legislature intended. Once it is determined that a particular body-worn camera can be released, a public body then has the opportunity to vindicate any privacy concerns it may have by applying Exemption 7(1)(c), at which time plaintiff can then, or requesters can then evaluate those claims and potentially raise any kind of public interest that might outweigh those claims, or indeed determine that it agrees and that there are certain that there are certain portions that can and should be withheld. And so what we're asking here is for the opportunity to do that. Again, this should not be, and the court and the legislature did not intend for this to be an all or nothing proposition based on the implication of privacy interests. All the court should look at here is whether or not the subjects of the video had a reasonable expectation of privacy in this given case. And defendant has simply failed to establish at any level, let alone by clear and convincing evidence, that that was the case. And so, for that reason, again, we would ask that this court reverse the circuit court's determination that the Body-Worn Camera Act prohibits release of the video and remand review of the Body-Worn Camera itself for further proceedings at the circuit court. Unless your honors have any other questions, that's all I have for now.
Questions?
None from me.
I just have one question, Ms. Levy, if you don't mind.
Of
So,
course.
as it relates to the reasonable expectation of privacy, am I to understand that your argument is that the plaintiffs in this case should have been allowed to view the body cam and then participate in the decision about the expectation of privacy?
No, Your Honor, and I'm sorry if I was unclear on that point. I think our position is that once, because there was a reasonable expectation of privacy in this case, at that point, defendant would then have should then have gone through the process of redacting the body-worn camera video with the what it believed to be the appropriate redactions. And then at that point, based on what they offered in support of those exemption claims, plaintiff could then make a determination about whether or not it wished to challenge them. But no, and until the video was released as either non-exempt or a court determined that the city failed to meet its burden of establishing exemption claim, only in those circumstances would plaintiff ever get to see it.
So, do you have any concern that the release of such body cam information where witnesses' identifications are disclosed might have a chilling effect on the investigative process?
I think, Your Honor, that concern again is sort of abrogated by the fact that this witness information has been freely released by the public body already, in its both its crash report. Or excuse me, in the crash report that it still makes available to anybody who wants to spend the $6 to get it. I think to the extent that that concern is based specifically on individuals' privacy, that's something that could be best addressed by 7(1)(c) because it's meant it's that exemption is targeted specifically at privacy interests as opposed to that expectation of privacy. But to the extent that the concern is based on whether or not releasing information about those witnesses would interfere with an ongoing investigation, again, I don't think the defendant has met their burden of showing that that is in fact the case here, especially given the information that they've already released to the public.
I have nothing else, Justice Smith.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Appellee, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. The city properly complied with FOIA. NBC requested records pertaining to the city's ongoing investigation into a fatal hit-and-run accident. The responsive records include documents revealing the progress of the investigation and the nature and extent of the evidence, POD camera footage showing the path of the suspect's vehicle, which was unknown to the public, and highly sensitive body camera footage taken at the scene of the accident, depicting the victim receiving treatment and witnesses, including a friend of the victim, describing the accident to the police. All of these records are exempt under Section 7(1)(d)(1) of FOIA. Further, release of the body-worn camera footage is prohibited by the Law Enforcement Officer-Worn Body Camera Act. For these reasons, summary judgment for the city was proper, and the judgment of the circuit court should be affirmed. I will begin by addressing 7(1)(d)(1). I will then address the Body-Worn Camera Act. So to begin, the city proved by clear and convincing evidence that all of the responsive records are exempt under Section 7(1)(d)(1), which exempts records where disclosure would interfere with pending or actually and reasonably contemplated law enforcement proceedings. The city's affidavit explains that at the time of NBC's requests, the perpetrator of the fatal hit-and-run accident remained at large, and investigators were still identifying and speaking with witnesses. In particular, the affidavit explains that CPD was actively investigating at least one specific individual who had not yet been arrested and charged. Releasing the responsive records would have alerted the perpetrator to the nature and progress of the investigation and revealed how much evidence the police have against them. This would allow the perpetrator to take steps to evade detection and capture or to attempt to flee the jurisdiction to avoid arrest, and would also allow them to create an alibi or fabricate evidence. The affidavit also explains that the records contain witness statements and likenesses, and thus revealing them could put witnesses at risk of harm from retaliation and make them less candid and cooperative with investigators. And in this case, the suspect has a history of convictions for violent crimes, which heightens that risk. Release could also alter the memory of witnesses, meaning investigators would be unable to determine the veracity of their statements. All of this was more than sufficient to carry the city's burden. Indeed, the affidavit here addresses all of the same concerns as the affidavit this court found sufficient in Ballew and is, in fact, even more detailed than that affidavit. And contrary to NBC's contention, the city has not attempted to invoke sort of a blanket exemption or an all or nothing exemption. The affidavit specifically identifies all of the responsive records, describes the information contained in each of them, and explains how release of that information would interfere with the investigation. Nor did the city's release of a limited amount of information in the crash report and the community alert undermine its reliance on the exemption. These documents do not reveal the nature and extent of the evidence that CPD has gathered against the suspect, nor do they capture the likenesses or voices of the witnesses, all of the narrative details of their statements, visuals of the scene of the accident, or video footage of the path of the suspect's vehicle. Plus, if we look at the format of the prior releases, the traffic report in particular, it's a shorthand, very dry details of the witness statements, and that is far different than the sort of attention-grabbing videos that we have here that can be widely disseminated across the social media and the internet, drawing the attention of the perpetrator, the public, and the witnesses themselves. For all of these reasons, the city has satisfied its burden approving that the responsive records are exempt under Section 71D1, and summary judgment was proper on that basis alone. But also, the city properly withheld the body-worn camera footage under the Body Camera Act. As plaintiff pointed out, the only dispute with regard to the act is whether the subjects of the videos had a reasonable expectation of privacy at the time of the recordings, and they plainly did. The victim was captured on video receiving medical treatment in the back of an ambulance. It is well established that individuals have a strong privacy interest in their medical information and are particularly vulnerable and thus entitled to privacy when receiving treatment. The witnesses, too, had a privacy interest here. They were giving statements to the police regarding a violent crime. As the city's affidavit explained, witnesses in such a situation are at risk of retaliation. This not only threatens their safety, but also makes them less likely to cooperate with police. For these reasons, courts have recognized that witnesses should be able to maintain their privacy. Moreover, one of the witnesses was a friend of the victim who was with her when the accident occurred and was no doubt in a vulnerable state when speaking with the police, describing this traumatic experience. And she is entitled to privacy for that reason as well. Thus, summary judgment for the city was also proper with respect to the body-worn camera footage. And I would also like to address briefly two points raised by the plaintiff. So, first, regarding the privacy interest, a plaintiff has asserted that we need to look to the Fourth Amendment privacy, the reasonable expectation of privacy. And we, as we explained in our brief, certainly under the Fourth Amendment reasonable expectation, there's no rule that all public interactions with police on public streets are public, that there certainly are privacy interests that can be recognized in those situations. But I would also like to point out that the Fourth Amendment protects government searches and seizures, whereas in this case, we're dealing with, release of private information to private parties like news outlets, who can use that information to disseminate it across the internet for wide release. So the FOIA interests encasing it in some of the other cases that we cite in our brief involving protective orders and discovery, those cases are more on point. Those deal with release of private interactions, private information to third parties, such as NBC in this case, such as media outlets, rather than the interest of the government, which is protected by which the Fourth Amendment addresses. So for those reasons, the FOIA cases, the understanding the expectation of privacy, we need to look to how that expectation is understood under FOIA in similar circumstances, rather than specifically the Fourth Amendment privacy interest cases. Although under that line of reasoning as well, as Katz itself points out, not all public interactions are public. In this case, clearly the witnesses had a reasonable expectation of privacy. It is certainly one that society is willing to recognize as reasonable. Clearly, as the Body Worn Camera Act itself has recognized that witnesses may have an expectation of privacy. And for that reason, as well, the body-worn camera footage is, sorry, summary judgment for the city was proper with the body-worn camera footage. I would also like to address plaintiffs' comments about in-camera review. So the law has been cle is clear in Illinois that in-camera review is not appropriate where the city or where an agency has satisfied its burden through affidavits, which the city has here. As well, in-camera review would have very limited use here, as the investigator of the incident, the one who prepared the affidavit, he is in the best position to understand how release of the specific information in the records would interfere with the ongoing investigation. He is certainly in a better position than the circuit court would be in understanding that information, and that is why Illinois courts accord an agency's affidavit a presumption of good faith. And the city's affidavit in this case, it was extremely detailed. It was far more detailed than the affidavit that this court upheld in Ballou under very similar circumstances, and it certainly isn't entitled to that presumption of good faith. However, if this court were to conclude that the city's affidavit was somehow insufficient, then we would say that the next step would be remand for in-camera review rather than ordering release of the records. And I would also just like to point out one more thing. So plaintiff has argued that we could simply redact, potentially blur the faces of the witnesses in the videos, redact other such information. But redactions would not address all of the concerns that are present in the release of these records. So redacting would not address would not protect the progress of the investigation, all of the details of the witness statements. And I would also like to point out that the Body Camera Act itself, it prohibits release of recordings, not specifically information in recordings, and does not contemplate, it does not necessarily, it does not allow for recordings to be released with images of the witnesses or of subjects of the videos redacted. I mean, it certainly doesn't require an agency to release videos that are otherwise prohibited from release with redactions. So for that reason as well, the city is entitled to summary judgment.
Any questions?
None for me.
I have nothing.
All right, Joshua, you can do your close.
Thank you very much, Your Honors, and I'll try to keep it brief here. If I may start with the Body-Worn Camera Act discussion that council just engaged in, I want to make a couple of points here. First, the idea that or I should say that the idea of this reasonable expectation of privacy analysis rooted in the Fourth Amendment, that's expressly brought into the statute both by its plain language and by the legislative history. The idea that it's tied, so it's tied very directly and very explicitly to this Fourth Amendment analysis rooted around a reasonable expectation of privacy. And again, all that covers is whether or not this record can be released. That's to say nothing of whether or not it can be released in its entirety, because that's a wholly separate discussion. And so I do want to respectfully disagree well, I guess agree to the extent that council stated that the Body-Worn Camera Act doesn't contemplate redaction. I think that's absolutely true. But the Body-Worn Camera Act itself isn't the basis for release of the records here. That is the Freedom of Information Act. And the Freedom of Information Act itself explicitly permits a record to be redacted. Not only that, but it explicitly permits a public body to redact a record to protect certain privacy interests. That's the entire purpose of Section 71C. And so while the Body-Worn Camera Act question is simply an up-down, can this video be released? It's sort of a yes or no. We maintain that under the intended reasonable expectation of privacy analysis, the answer to that question is yes. And it should then turn to the question of what portions of this video can be released and what portions can be properly withheld. That's a discussion that wasn't had in a level of detail based on the lower court's determination that the Body-Worn Camera Act applied. But we ask that on remand, that is the type of discussion that could proceed. And one final point on that, again, I do want to clarify that plaintiff is not claiming here that everything in the body cam must be released. Certainly, there are aspects that plaintiff isn't even seeking, any kind of graphic material, or certain other types of record. These aren't what necessarily plaintiff is even seeking. The fact is, the parties weren't able to get into that discussion at any level of depth because the court found that the Body-Worn Camera Act applied. Finally, on the 71D issue, I do just again want to note the incongruity of defendants' position here. While at one time providing significant detail about the suspect and their vehicle and the actions that they took, and on the other hand, claiming that release of that or similar information would somehow put this suspect on notice that they are in fact still a suspect or are still being investigated. The fact that this individual, that release of these records would in some way, I guess, let this suspect know any more than they already do that they are a suspect in this crime, sort of strains credulity. And again, that's the reason that a more in-depth analysis by the circuit court was necessary. Again, it's a two-step process. Did the public body meet their burden of establishing the exemption claim? We maintain that they did not, and only at that point then would an in-camera review be appropriate. We maintain because defendant has failed to meet their burden on that point, the circuit court should have conducted an in-camera review and ordered the non-exempt portions of the record to be released. And we would ask once more that Your Honors reverse the circuit court's determination and remand this case for additional in-camera review. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Nope.
I have none.
All right, well, thank you both. The hardest part I see in this case is timing. It's almost there was too much of a delay between the initial release of what was released and what then the newspaper wanted. So it's kind of hard to put a strong footage on some of the questions you guys raise. But anyway, you both laid out the arguments of the case very well, and we'll do our best to see what we think about the timing. Thank you.
Thank you for your time,
Well
Your
done.
Honors. Thank you.